Some weeks ago, we began this series on the subject of death, reading from Psalms, the 90th chapter, of which I would want to take two verses. For all our days are passed away in thy wrath. We bring our years to an end as a sigh. The days of our years are 70 years, or even by reason of strength, 80 years. Yet is there pride but labor and sorrow, for it is soon gone, and we fly away. In our first song this morning, we sang, was taken from this particular thought and this particular song. And in the course it says, as the life of a flower, as a breath or a sigh, so the years glide away, and alas, we must die. We want to continue our series today on the subject of life and death. As we have been talking about life and death from the book of Ecclesiastes, we would be reminded that here in the book of Psalms, we are told that we can rightfully expect on the average to live approximately 70 years. So if we were to draw a line up here and let this line represent a 70-year period of time from our birth over here to our death, we could find that there are people that live a little longer than 70. There are some little babies that are born into the world and live only 30 minutes or an hour, and their short life could be illustrated by a small line. There are others that would come up here halfway or maybe a third, and then their life would soon end. They would fade, and alas, we must die. All of you realize that in the past 2 weeks, my sister lived just a little bit longer than the 70 years. Some 44 years, and as we said, she had everything that this world could possibly offer. What really we don't know is the agony and the anxiety that families have to go through in the period of death that we will be talking about later on in our particular series. But as you begin to look at the lives of all the people as they would be illustrated in various ways, one thing is common to all men. Regardless of what you have, the time comes when every person in this building must die. As I illustrated before I left, she had everything that this world could possibly offer. And she had it, and it was of such a nature that nobody expected that she would die in their lifetime. My brother-in-law was just getting ready to go down and start moving things into her name because he said, I was absolutely certain that I would die before she did, and I wanted it all moved out and legalities taken care of. And so at that age of 44, of where she had all of the things this world could offer, her husband had been very successful, she had had wealth. A few days before she died, she had learned that she even had oil on her farm. She was a beautiful girl. She was thin, wore a number 7 dress, and had to take it up a little. She was exuberant, and everybody liked her. And at her funeral, in just a matter of a few hours, over 700 people signed the guest register. I stood for 5 solid hours shaking hands with people. And in addition to the sympathy of saying, I'm sorry, everyone would shake their head and say, it is such a shock. What I'm telling the story for is to try to impress us with the fact that an entire community was brought to its knees and stalled because a young woman that had everything that this world would offer fell the fate of man. A few days later, Nelson Rockefeller died. Nelson Rockefeller's life would come over here and be just one little line longer than the 70 years, as he was 71 years of age. But we can learn a great lesson from his life, from his death, and the book of Ecclesiastes, where in the first 6 chapters, Solomon is showing us the power and riches and pleasure and all of these things. Even though they might be good to be used in a proper way, they are not the goal of our life. And regardless of what you have, he shows us that one day you must die. Nelson Rockefeller was approximately a billionaire. If he got up every day of his life and rented a $1,000 motel room, a new one, every day, every morning he bought a new $2,000 suit, in every meal he purchased a $100 meal, and between snacks, between every meal, he bought $33 worth of snacks. If every morning he went out and bought a $20,000 Mercedes-Benz, in the evening he pushed it over the cliff without any reselling. He drove his $20,000 Mercedes-Benz to the airport and every morning purchased a new $50,000 airplane and pushed it in the ocean every evening. And then, as his business day began, he paid cash for a $100,000 house. He would still have to stay awake 24 hours a day and spend $4,188.62 to even break even on the interest of the money that he has in the bank. Years could be extended out before he could ever even start getting in to the principal of that riches. And yet, with all of the riches that the man had, with all the power that he had in the United States, with all the pleasure that was his to enjoy, again we see that, alas, he must die. Now you say, why do you start your last three or four sermons talking about people dying? Again, we go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and in verse 2. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. And so, if we truly want to learn about what life is all about, we not only look at the life of Nelson Rockefeller as he lived a long and fruitful and powerful and rich political life, but his life is vain unless we take in consideration the day of his death. And so the book of Ecclesiastes then is trying to show us how important it is for us to live this life in preparation for the day that we die. Now the first six chapters is telling us that all of these things are vain within themselves. He shows that man strive for riches and power and pleasure and these various things, but all of them are in vain unless we prepare for the day that we die. Now lest we get caught up and say that riches are no good, that wisdom is fruitless, then he puts a section in the book of Ecclesiastes between chapter 7 and chapter 12 to show us that indeed it is good to live a life of wisdom while we are existing upon this earth. In chapter 12 we get back to a very beautiful and awesome conclusion to life upon this earth. But today we begin where we left off in chapter 9 and down in verse 13. Where we want to just go through and briefly scan the verses till we get down to chapter 11 and verse 8. If we were studying this in a class, it would take us two or three class periods for us to stop and analyze what he's saying. Because this is the section of the book of Ecclesiastes that could be called the section of the Proverbs. He here is going to use little catchy sayings that teach a great deal about how to live in our life. But in chapter 9, verse 13 through 18, the remaining part of the chapter, after he has just shown that wisdom is not the goal in life, then he shows that wisdom is much better than anything else that you can get, because it will help you in life. He said, I have also seen wisdom under the sun on this wise, and it seemed great unto me, that there was a little city and a few men within it, and there came a great king against it and besieged it, and built great bulwarks against it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Yet no man remembered that same poor man, Then said I, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of the wise are heard in quiet are better than the cry of him that ruleth among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroyeth much good. So what he's saying is that if you want to live a life and be happy upon this earth, yes, one thing that we have to do, even though we don't use wisdom as our goal in life, even though that we don't strive and say, if I can achieve wisdom, I will have found happiness. The first six chapters says that's impossible. Yet he says that I have found that if you want to be happy, wisdom right here is a very powerful and helpful thing in this world. Even though oftentimes it is not appreciated by our mankind. And he gives the illustration of how a poor, wise man saved the city. And yet because he didn't have riches, nobody remembered him because all he had was wisdom. And yet had he had riches without wisdom, the entire city would have been dead. And so Solomon says then, I have learned one lesson. I have learned a lesson that even though wisdom might not be properly appreciated by my fellow man, that wisdom really is a powerful and helpful thing for us to glean in this world. And he says, wisdom that is heard among the quiet. Just a few words of wisdom spoken to a few people is much better than a fool's crying, whether it be on the floor of Congress or over national television, where a fool cries to many people. He said, I care not how you compare them. Wisdom is something that will be a protector to you and help you live in this world the way that you ought to live. The key is don't get confused. Wisdom is not your goal, but wisdom is necessary for you to reach your goal. He's trying to show us what is necessary for life upon this earth. Now he goes into chapter 10. He said, dead flies cause the oil of the perfumer to send forth an evil odor. So doth a little folly outweigh wisdom and honor. Now you could think about that for hours and it would still be fresh and fruitful. The way that he has put it, that you could take a whole barrel of a perfumer's oil that he has made and has a beautiful fragrance. And then you let a dead fly fall in there and putrefy it. The odor will be changed and the whole barrel of oil will be ruined. So he says that a man can live a life of wisdom and he can live a life of honor, and one foolish act will destroy his entire life. So make sure that in our living with wisdom, we make sure that just a little folly, a little foolishness does not cause it to fall completely apart. We're living in an age of freedom. We're living in an age that is infiltrating the church, and perhaps you're not aware of it because it really has not hit in this section to any great extent. But living in an age of freedom, of where we say that we are free to do as we would please, that nobody can bind anything, that we can do whatever we would like to do. And so social drinking in the church beginning to become prominent in some sections of the country. You can't tell me I can't have a little drink. You can't tell me I can't wear a certain kind of clothing. Within 2 days' time, I was asked by preachers way outside this vicinity who called, and one of the elders' wives had been having an affair for over a year. She was caught. The elder says, it's not my fault. I don't care. I'm not going to resign. Doesn't make any difference. And he didn't. And the church divided right down the middle. About a day or two later, I got a call from another preacher. Said, I don't know what to do about a problem. Can you give me a suggestion? One of the elders of this congregation is going up to the bar, just having a little wine. He never gets drunk. And he goes around and puts his arm around the waitress and pats her in her private areas and said, people are talking. And I brought it to the eldership, and the other elder says, oh, he doesn't mean anything by this. Why, Joe is just outgoing and he's friendly, and this is the way that he shows how friendly he is. Nothing wrong with that. What would you do? You can't tell me what I'm going to do. I have freedoms. The Bible doesn't say I can't do something of that nature. But in every case of that, whether it be in the eldership or whether it be in any person's life, Solomon says that a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. So remember, in our wisdom, keep our life pure and keep our life wholesome without foolishness attached to it. And then he says, a wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool at his left. That is, a fool doesn't know where he's going. A wise man knows where to put where his heart is. He knows right over here's my heart. But a fool, in other words, a fool doesn't know which way to go. Yea, also when the fool walketh in his way, his understanding faileth him. He saith to everyone that he's a fool. Now, the way he says it is by his actions. These elders that I'm talking about, oh, they tell you how wise, how brilliant they are. But they say to everyone that they're a fool. Anybody could understand that by the activities of their life. And then he says, if the spirit of the ruler rise up against thee, leave not thy place, for gentleness allayeth great offenses. In other words, don't get up and start fighting. Be kind, be gentle. Gentleness soothes anger is the idea. Now in verse 5 and through 7, he said, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun, as it were an error which proceedeth from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, and the rich set in low places. I have seen servants upon horses, and princes walking like servants upon the earth. Now while you're exercising your wisdom, he said, remember this, you're going to see things that are unfair in this world. And if you're a fool, you'll probably run out and try to correct it right then and there. But if you're wise, you're going to understand things are not always fair. He said, I have seen here folly set in great dignity. I have seen men who are fools set in great high offices. I have seen fools riding the white horses, or we would say the limousines, in the ticker tape parade. But he said, I have seen princes walking. That's not the way it ought to be. But wisdom will dictate to you and tell you that's the way it is. And you better learn to live within the system. Don't rise up and challenge and go out and say, I will change this. It is not going to be done. Now verses 8 through 11 is telling you again a bit of wisdom. He's trying to show us how to live wisely right here before we die. He said, he that diggeth a pit shall fall into it, and whoso breaketh through a wall, a serpent shall bite him. Whoso heweth out stone shall be hurt therewith, and he that cleaveth wood is endangered thereby. Now let's stop right here. What he is showing is merely this, that if you're busy going out and digging a pit, now this of course will bring many of your attentions to the Proverbs, and that will take your attention back to Esther, where Haman tried to dig a pit, so speakingly, to catch Mordecai, and he fell in his own pit. And I realize that this is hanging, but it's the same principle in there, that if you go out and you dig a pit to try to catch somebody else, you're going to fall in that pit. On the other hand, if you're going out and digging pits to try to catch animals, somewhere along the line, you're going to fall in that animal, or that animal pit. If you go out and you're a trapper, of which today we use steel traps instead of pits, you go out and you set 200 or 300 steel traps every day, some of these days you're going to get your finger in that trap. That's all he's saying. Then he comes on down and he says, now if you break through a wall, in other words, if you are destroying things, and this could be a righteous destruction of where they hire you to come out and destroy, when you go into these old buildings and you start tearing them down, one of the favorite places for poisonous snakes to be in that particular hot place is to crawl up in the cracks of those stone walls. You're going to get snake bit. That's all he's saying. You have to understand that you're going to suffer in certain jobs. He said if you're a woodcutter, you're going to get hurt by wood. Tom Honey has worked in the woods for many years. Talk to him. You'll laugh yourself to death at all of the things that's happened to him since they're already over. They weren't funny then. But things have happened then where he has seen men actually flip clear through the air. Ronnie Cope's brother, right out through the air by a tree. And legs broken, and all things have happened that certainly wasn't funny then. But you can ask him, will you get hurt in the woods? Ask an insurance company. They won't insure you. Why, what's the idea? The idea is this. If you're going to live by wisdom, you have to understand that whatever you engage in, there are certain dangers that you are going to have to accept. If you're going to go out and work in the woods, and the pay is great, but the insurance premium is high, and the hospital bills are frequent, and you have to take that in consideration. And so, whatever you do, think about the consequences of it. If you're going to go out here and go down the highway, going to get out and drive in the snow, better watch it. 4 accidents from this one congregation Friday night. You're going to have to pay for your activities. So act with wisdom. You're going to drive in the snow? Get a machine that will drive in the snow. Don't get one where you're going to be going around in various ways. So what he's saying is, walk in wisdom. And always keep this in consideration, that there is always a consequence of every act you engage in. Are you willing to pay the consequence? If not, don't engage in it. Now verse 10. If the iron be blunt, and one do not whip the edge, there must be more strength. But wisdom is profitable to direct. Now what this is talking about is a woodcutter, an axe. If you're out cutting wood and your axe gets dull, all of us have done it 1,000 times. We don't want to stop and sharpen and quit the edge. It takes time. We want to finish the job. Well, I said you have to understand that you're going to pay for it one way or the other. What a lesson that we never learn. Hardly any man, I suppose, ever learns this, regardless of the age that he lives to. You have to pay for it somehow or another. Either you stop and take the time and whip the axe and then cut the wood easily, or you have to get back and break your back hitting so hard that you cut it. One way or the other, you're going to pay for it. Steve Voss has a saying, there ain't no free meals. Solomon put it a little more dignified. But it says exactly the same thing. You're going to pay for what you get. Now, if you want to work in wisdom, you want to be a wise individual, don't try to get a free lunch. Don't try to get things free. Be willing to pay for what you get. I'm not saying go out and try to throw your money away, and if you get a chance to pay a higher price for something, do it. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, understand this, when low prophet Glenn is overstocked at his Fords, as he is right now, and I saw it on television, and he has to get rid of them, don't go to low prophet Glenn. He's not giving you anything. 2 months ago, he was overstocked on his 78s. There's somebody down there that doesn't know how to buy, see? And so look at this thing. Either there's somebody going to take you, or there's a fool in that company. It's one of the two. And so say, all right, I will work wisely, get things the best I can, but I know that whatever it is, whether it's cutting wood or buying an automobile, inevitably, I must pay my own way. And if you'll have that attitude, willing to work and willing to pay your own way, you'll be a person that people will appreciate. Verse 11, if the serpent bite before it is charmed, then there is no advantage to the charmer. Now, we've all seen, you know, the serpent that comes up and charms, and And the fact is, nobody knows how they charm those snakes. They're still studying it. Science is studying it and trying to figure out how they do it. Is it something in their eyes, or is it in the movement, or is it in the music? Nobody knows, but here's the whole idea Solomon is getting at. That if you go out and you jump into something and do something before you ought to do it, then it doesn't make much difference whether you do it right. In other words, if I'm going to go out and charm a snake, I reach in the basket to get him and he bites me. From then on, it doesn't make much difference whether I shake my head right or what I do. I'm dead, see? The idea is, go about things the way they ought to be going about. Think before you act. Shouldn't ask people to do that, should we? Almost outside the realm of human beings. To think, really, before we act. That's what he's saying. If you want to live in wisdom, if you want to be happy, think before you act. Have you ever seen people that just seem like they're happy all the time? Never get in trouble? And other people, every time you see them, you're afraid to ask them how things are going because you know they got in trouble? This is the solution. This is what he's saying. This is what will help us to live happily on this earth. Now then, he comes back to fools again. And I'm going to skip verses 12 through 15, because he comes back again what fools will do, how they get us in trouble. But in verse 16, woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child, and thy princes eat in the morning. Now, what he's saying is this. If you get a young king to rule over you that is not mature, get ready for problems. And when your princes get up and they start having banquets in the morning, rather than doing their business that they ought to be doing, woe unto that country. Happy art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles, and thy princes eat in due season for strength and not for drunkenness. Now, if you have a country where your king is a son of a noble, and this is something to think about, wisdom dictates this. Suppose, we say this quite a lot. We say, I wish we could kick everybody out of government and just put a bunch of old farmers up there. Now, I feel that way. See? I feel that way, and if you caught me at the right time, I'd probably vote that way. And we'd probably destroy our country. What he's saying right here is woe to a country when things of this nature happens. But when you have a son of a noble, when you have men that are prepared, they have been brought up in families that are accustomed to ruling countries. They understand justice. They understand that they must act for the benefit of the whole country. Then happiness can come to that country. So what he's saying is that you must understand that there are times when a country is going to have problems because of its leaders being fools. And there's times when a country is going to be happy and prosperous when those leaders are the nature that they ought to be. He goes on through that section down to verse 20, talking about kings that feast and revel and so forth, and they'll get a country into trouble. But wisdom dictates that. Wisdom helps us understand it. Now, a lot of people just go crazy. You know, if the Republicans win the next election, there'll be people that will almost lose their mind. If the Democrats get in again, why, be people that knows the country can't stand it, and we won't even be here in another 4 years. What he's saying is, wisdom tells us that these things are going to happen. Accept them in this way. Now, in verse 20, revile not the king, no, not in thy thought, and revile not the rich in thy bedchamber, for a bird of the heaven shall carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. Now, we have a saying, you know, that when I tell you I heard something about you, and you say, where'd you hear that? And I say, a little bird told me. This is where it came from. See, it's not an American piece of wisdom, but it's here. A little bird told me. In other words, I found it out in a way that you can't possibly conceive of. Now, what he's saying is that don't even talk about them in your bedchamber, because a little sparrow might be sitting out there, and he'll fly away and he'll tell the king. In other words, when you think it can't be done, it will be done. Now, we live in a country where this is really hard to appreciate. Because we not only can talk about our king in the bedchamber, but we can get on national television and talk about him. If he goes on national television, his enemy can demand equal and free time and talk about him. And so it's hard for us to visualize it. But not in other countries. The Philippines helped me appreciate this. When we flew down to the island down there, and I was telling you about that, I had a little fears about things that were going to happen. We were sitting out on a balcony of a motel room that had one little light in the top up there, and it was dingy and drabby and rainy that evening. And so I asked my Filipino guide, I said, really, what about President Marcos? What do you think of him? So he started in, and he started telling me how he's a dictator and what he had done and how they'd come through the homes and how they'd confiscated things and how people had disappeared. Now, we live in a country where this is really hard to appreciate, because we not only can talk about our king in the bedchamber, but we can get on national television and talk about him. If he goes on national television, his enemy can demand equal and free time and talk about him. And so it's hard for us to visualize it. But not in other countries. The Philippines helped me appreciate this. When we flew down to the island down there, and I was telling you about that, I had a little fears about things that were going to happen. We were sitting out on the balcony of a motel room that had one little light in the top up there, and it was dingy and drabby and rainy that evening. And so I asked my Filipino guide, I said, really, what about President Marcos? What do you think of him? So he started in, and he started telling me how he's a dictator and what he had done and how they'd come through the homes and how they'd confiscated things and how people had disappeared. And he says, a lot of times if you just say something, you just say something, you know, that you don't like the government, a couple weeks later you just disappear. And boy, it hit me. And I tried to shut him up. Here a little bird can tell this. In a strange country and talking in this way. This is what he's talking about. Wisdom would dictate in a situation like that. There are other things you ought to talk about if you want to live a long time. See? This is the thing that he's getting at. All right, now in chapter 11, verse 1. He starts out now with benevolence. telling that if we want to be happy, we're going to have to be really a benevolent people. And wisdom will dictate this. All of this is under wisdom. What do you do as far as benevolence is concerned? Well, he said, cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Give a portion to seven, yea, even unto eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. Now, what's the idea? Well, there's a lot of times that you cast your bread out and you know that you're just throwing them away. So, what do? You don't ever help anybody then. Alan Hitchin called me last night and said, I've got some problems. I want to talk to you. One of the problems was, what do you do about these church bumps? He said, I'm getting so hard, Lowell, that I'm afraid of myself. He said, is it normal to get hard? He said, everyone that comes through just trying to steal, see? And I said, well, Alan, I don't have the answers to that. I said, I do know that if you give to everybody that comes through, the vast majority of them, I mean 999 out of 1,000 and even more than that, are nothing more than bums, and you're just helping them. And then I also know that if you turn them away and say, I'm not going to help you, and you go home, you can't sleep that night wondering whether you made a little kid starve to death. And he said, yeah, that's my problem. No, it doesn't matter. All right, the whole point is, he called up and said, I'm getting so hard, I don't want to help anybody. Now, there's a danger. Now, it's foolish just to help a thief. But what he's saying right here is, it's better to lose some bread than to become hard-hearted and not help anybody. Cast your bread upon the waters. When you cast your bread upon the waters, throw them out, the bread sinks, you don't know what happened to it. Cast your bread out. You don't know really what's going to happen to it. You don't have to follow it out and see, will this help or will I give to somebody once in a while that will misspend this? He's saying wisdom dictates be a benevolent type of a person. How benevolent? Give unto seven, yea, unto eight. Seven is complete and eight is even more so. And so, don't ever get hard-hearted to where you will not help somebody who truly is in need of help. He said, because you're going to find it after many days. It'll come back home someday. Then verse 3. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if a tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there shall it be. Now, what in the world could there be in a tree falling in the Bible? What is the idea? The idea is, if you want to live a life of wisdom, you want to be happy, you really want to understand that, understand there are some things you are not going to do anything about. Just understand that. There are some things that you cannot do anything about. Now, he said, if a cloud comes over, you can cry, you can kick, you can get in your automobile, run into a tree. I don't care what you do, but that cloud will either empty its water or it'll keep its water, and there's nothing that you're going to do about it. Now, he said, if a tree falls to the south or it falls to the north, there it is. It's there. Now, what happened? Here the other day, my neighbor had some drunk, I suppose, come along, veered off in his yard, and knocked his tree down, just flat down. The wind might blow a tree. What do you do? I don't believe I've ever seen a tree blowing down on my property where I wanted it to be. Where Jim McCarthy now lives, one night about 2 o'clock in the morning, I got a call in a terrible rainstorm. Woman calling, tree fell on the apartment. And it sounded like everything was gone. I went over and there's a branch about the size of my arm right through the wall, right down into the light socket, and all the water was pouring down through the light, and she had a garbage can in there. 2 o'clock in the morning and raining so hard that you can't see. Now, I really didn't want that tree on that apartment. What do you do? Well, stand out there and jump up and down in the parking lot and cry. No. I say, I'm sorry, ma'am. I really am. I'll be back in the morning. I could either stay there and haul her water out for her, or I could go home or whatever I wanted to do, but one thing I knew, where that tree landed, that tree was going to stay until the appropriate time to remove that tree. And so, you can go back home, you can go to sleep, or you can go back home and stay awake so you don't have any strength to remove it the next day. Whatever you want to do. This is what he's getting at. And you know, there is a lot of wisdom in how to deal with a fallen tree, isn't there? A lot of wisdom. If we can learn how to deal with a fallen tree, if we can learn how to deal with an automobile accident, talk to Jack Hafer. His, I think, was the best one Friday night, coming along and veered out somehow or another and let a truck hit him and circled him around, went back and let a car hit him. And they both belonged to the same person trying to get home. Now, I doubt if those cars and trucks hit Jack right where he wanted to be hit. And I doubt if it all went according to his plans. Now, he can make of it whatever he wants to. He can go crazy. He can say, I'm going to drop out of studying. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to move to whatever he wants to do. Whatever he does, that car is still going to be dented, and he's going to pay for it one way or the other. So this is all that he's saying. And if we can learn how to deal with little things like this, then we'll understand how to deal with some big problems. Because there's some big problems that you can't do anything about. And so, just lie down and go to sleep and continue to serve the Lord regardless of how big they are. Well, he goes ahead in verse 5, the same thing. As thou knowest not what is the way of the wind or how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the work that God, the work of God who doeth all. So, they're just things that you're not going to learn. Man can't forecast the future. We can't tell about things of that nature. Well, what do you do then? Is there going to be a depression? Will Seattle continue its economic boom? Should you buy a new home right now or wait later? What's going to happen next winter? Will we have a drought? Is Seattle's weather changing? Should we get out of here before Western Washington turns to a desert? I don't know. These things, nobody knows. These are things in the future. Well, what do you do? Lowell, since you're so dumb and you don't know any of these things, what are you going to do? We said, here's what you do. Wherever you are, here's what you do. In the morning, sow thy seed. And in the evening, withhold not thy hand, for thou knowest not which shall prosper, whether this or that, whether they both shall be alike good. Go about your business. That's what he said. Get up in the morning and go sow your seed. In the evening, go out and do whatever you need to do that evening. You might work on your farm in the morning, and you might go to town and
buy a store or do something in the evening. You don't know which one's going to prosper. So what do? You just do what you can do. You work with your hands that which is good. You enjoy your labor, and God will take care of all of it. He said, truly the light is sweet and a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to see the sun. Now what does that mean? The only time that you're seeing the sun is while you're living here in this earth. Now so far, we've kind of had life to be a dismal thing, haven't we? Solomon started out in showing how to live it, and it seems like it's kind of dismal. It doesn't make any difference if you're wise, you're going to die. If you're rich, you're going to die. If you have pleasure, you're going to die. If you're poor, you're going to die. Whatever it is, there's one thing that happens to everybody. We all go to the grave. Whether it be long, whether it be short, or whether it be a baby that is just born. So life is a dismal thing. No, now he's getting ready to come to his conclusion. Truly the light is sweet and a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. We're looking at the sun now. Life under the sun, that's what it's all about. What is life under the sun? It's life while we're living here. Is it good or bad? It's good. Life under the sun is pleasant. Life under the sun is good. If we'll live the way that it ought to be lived. And so he says, it is good. Yea, if a man live many years, let him rejoice in them all. Next week, we're going to be talking about in them all. Whether you're young or whether you're old, have fun. One of the bad things really about life is, while we're young, we just can't wait to get old. When we're 13, we can't wait till we get to be 17. When we're 17, we just can't wait until we're married and have a family. And we just, our life looks almost like it has come to an end. You know, if we are not married by 19, by 20, just hardly worth living. Do we enjoy those years? No, they're miserable. Miserable years because we don't see anything good in life. So then we get on up, and finally we get out here, we get in business. And we just can't wait till we can get successful. Just can't wait. Three or four guys going down to work with old Steve, and all of you know Steve works about 2 hours a day, 2 days a week, and the rest of the time does what he wants to do. So they say, I believe I'll get an insurance. And, okay, what do you do? Ron Cope's got an office down there. Down anytime you want to. Ron's got a telephone plugged into his ear. Calling all day. All evening. Just work. And just, I wish I could get where Steve is. See, I wish I could get there. So, Ron may not be enjoying what he's doing right now. Then finally you get up where Steve is. Your back hurts. You can't go do those things you want to do. You sat over in this office looking at old Ron and said, boy, I wish I was his age. Man, if I was his age, here's what I'd do. So you can go all through life if you want to. One guy can go all through life hating his youth, can't wait till he gets married. Not enjoying anything in the young age. Then when he does get married, hating that marriage, wishing he was single again. Wanting a job. When you get a job, you hate the job. And all the way through, and what a bore life is. So what he says, this is not the way it ought to be. God intended for us to enjoy life all the days of our life. While we're young, enjoy being young. While we're middle-aged, enjoy being middle-aged. While we're old, enjoy being old. And don't try to live in another span. But that's what we'll be talking about next week. Now he says in verse 8, for if a man live many years, let him rejoice in them all. But let him remember the day of darkness. That's the day of death. I don't care who you are, whether you're an old man, a Nelson Rockefeller, that day better be on your mind. If you're my young sister who is putting the luggage into her trunk, getting ready to go on a vacation to Hawaii, thinking about that beautiful trip, you better be thinking about the day of that death. If you're a young boy or girl in your teens, enjoying health and life and have your own car, you better be thinking about that day of death. It doesn't make any difference who you are, he says. I want you to enjoy life. But don't you ever
forget the day of darkness, for they shall be many. All that cometh is vanity. So if you ruin this life, every person, whether you're young or you're old, are going to go into the days of darkness. And we'll talk about where you're going. The idea is that whether you're young or you're old, every person is going in the day of darkness. And whatever you accomplish upon this earth will one day all be vain. Whether you're the richest person that ever lived, or whether you're a poor man with or without wisdom, whether you're young or whether you're old, in just a few more days, it will not make any difference. My question is the obituaries. Death is all around us. And God says, have fun while you're living, but don't forget, you're going to die. And with that statement, He now launches in to the end of life and what life is all about, as we will be able to get into our conclusion next week. Before our regular announcements are made today, I want to make one announcement concerning our classes. This one announcement really is concerning three of the classes that will be taught this next semester. First of all, remember that our semester classes will begin tomorrow night. That will be the first classes. And there are class schedules, plenty of them, in the back of the room. Monday night, Jim Putterbowl will be teaching Ezekiel and Daniel and Revelation, as well as classes for all of the various ages. Tuesday morning again, Ezekiel and Daniel will be taught by Jim Putterbowl. And Doris Williams is in the process right now of teaching a class called Bringing Up a Child. Now, there is a little note in there that Jim's class will meet for a period of time from 11 to 12:15. Doris will conclude her class the first part of March, so there's a little footnote down there that beginning then, March 13th, Jim's class will be moved back from 10 to 11:15. I make that announcement for those of you who would find that the later time period going into the noon hour would be inconvenient. It will only be that way for about 5 weeks. Now, on Tuesday night, we're going to have a class that we've never had here before. That is that there have been many people over the years that have stated, I don't want to take Greek in detail. I don't want to have to learn all of those tables and go through an entire year before I even start reading. And is there some way that I can have a course where I can learn to use the Greek lexicons and so forth? All right, we're going to have a class of that nature that will be one semester long. And it's not designed to teach the technicalities of Greek. We're going to be teaching the basics. And we're going to be teaching it in a way where it will be a practical situation. And you then will be able to use your lexicon be able to look up the Greek words. And one of the problems, if you've ever tried to use it, is that if you look up, take a Greek word in your Bible, try to look it up in the lexicon, about, oh, I would say 75 to 80% of the time, it will be spelled differently in the lexicon than it is in your Bible. And so there's no way that you can look it up. Now, it's simple. There's no mistakes involved. It's very simple, but you have to learn what that spelling means and how to make that transition. And again, there are books that show you. It's not a great thing. You have to be real brilliant to do it and so forth. It's very basic, very simple. And so it's going to be along these lines. So if you're interested in having a small amount of knowledge, really in Greek, but the amount to where you're able to use your lexicons and those Greek books, then that is what we mean on Tuesday night by that spatial Greek class. Then one other thing on Tuesday night, it has been suggested to me that the Peter and Jude class from 8:30 to 10 is a little late for a lot of people who want to take a regular Bible class, but they are not interested in either preacher training or in the spatial Greek class. So if you fall in that category, Tuesday night we're going to find out if it will be convenient for the people in these classes to reverse that and move the Peter and Jude back to 7:30, the spatial Greek up to 8:30. And we, since they are put in the schedule this way, we're going to leave them. All classes will meet according to the schedule that is on this paper. But all I'm saying is that if you're one of those that says, I can't come that late, then come to the first class, and then we'll find out if we can change. If we can't, why then you can go ahead and drop. Now on Wednesday night, Jim will be teaching Greek and Timothy and Titus. On Thursday night, we will have a class called Salvation. Again, this is a class that we've never taught, but it's a class that is a needed class that is just going to be dealing with the basic principles of salvation. And I have listed down here dealing with law and grace and faith, repentance, confession, and baptism. The greater part of this class will not be dealing with faith, repentance, confession, and baptism the way we do in a sermon. But when we get into them, we'll be going into them in depth. In other words, what is confession? Why is it made? What does the Bible say about the whole all-around thing, the technicalities there? But we're going to be dealing with the salvation at its basic roots. And that is back with the love of God, the grace of God. What really does faith actually mean? The blood of Christ. How does the blood of Christ save you? How does faith and works coincide? How do they work together? How does the Bible one time state that you're not saved by works and another time you are saved by works? And these various things of salvation, of which I think will be a very interesting class. Then that same night, Thursday night, from 8 to 9:30, the book of Acts will be taught. And if you will note, this will be chapters 13 through 28. Now again, as all of you know, the book of Acts is pretty simple, the first 12 chapters. You get in there, and when we go through it pretty rapidly. And when we hit chapter 13, it's when we hit all of those journeys and all of those preachers. And in a little while, things began to get fuzzy and confusing, unless you spend a whole lot of time at it. So, a great number of people say, boy, I wish that I could take the latter part of the book of Acts. I know the first part, but that last part, I'd like to have a refresher course. Well, what has happened is, last semester, we taught the first 12 chapters. Now, starting next Thursday night, then, we will begin teaching the last section of the book of Acts, chapters 13 through 28, and we will be able to take it slowly enough to where you will be able to master all of those cities and all of those things that seem to fuse together in this next semester. Now, I will say that for those of you who want to get in that class and you want to refresh yourself and you didn't take last semester's class, don't come to this next Thursday night class. Don't come to it, because we're going to spend that hour finishing up things that I didn't get to finish up because of my sister's funeral in chapters 11 and 12 and the test. So you come then the following week and we'll be into it.